This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Did you know that there were more natural disasters in 2011 than any other year in recorded history? So far, 2012 is on track to beat this record with even more earthquakes, tornadoes, and floods. When disasters and hyperinflation happens, grocery store shelves go empty. People are left without food and are forced to rely on the government. Don't let this happen to you. BuyEmergencyFoods.com offers delicious, ready-made meals from Legacy Premium Food Storage at the best prices available anywhere. Don't be fooled by the more expensive, less convenient, and poorly packaged emergency food storage options out there. Legacy Premium Food Storage meals are vegetarian friendly, taste delicious, and are ready to eat in just minutes. With premium ingredients made in the USA, plus all of these great tasting emergency meals come with a worry-free 25-year shelf life. So if you're worried about food inflation, economic crisis, unemployment, or natural disasters, then don't delay and prepare your family now. Order today and use the promo code E2E and get free shipping and 5% off on every item. Again, go to buyemergencyfoods.com and get prepared today. BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, 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 welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci, and with me always is Colorado Ron. You there, Colorado?
I'm here. How's it going, buddy?
Dude, I'm so exhausted. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What a trip. What a trip.
Yeah, so you guys missed us last weekend. We had a best of. And those of you guys that follow us on our Facebook page or the website or whatever else, last weekend we were in, oh my goodness, where were we? Oh, Mesa, Arizona.
Mesa, Arizona. So, yeah.
I'm already got a mental block. I don't want to be anywhere near Mesa, Arizona again for a while. We had a good show. And, you know, I drove from Iowa to Colorado Ron's house, which was about 12 hours pulling a trailer. And then we loaded up with his family, well, his dad and his two sons who were helping at the event. And then we drove over to New Mexico, across to Arizona into Flagstaff, and then down into Mesa. And that was what, like a how many hour drive?
It took us, well, it was 2 full days for us and how slow we were moving because we were pulling a trailer. So.
And
14 hours.
And we bucked the headwind the entire time going over.
Oh, of course.
couldn't get any assist here. You know, although we were darn lucky, a day later, Colorado got a snowstorm all the way up through the mountains of New Mexico, so we just missed that.
Yep.
So that was lucky.
Yeah, we got to count our blessings there, I guess.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had 2 days of an event. And then I had to backtrack it. But the funny thing was, when I left Colorado Ron's house, I got all the way to, I think it's Kearney, and is the name of the town. And
Nebraska.
Yeah, Kearney, Nebraska, and then blew a seal on my transmission. And next thing I know, I'm thinking, oh, I'm only 2 hours away from home, and I'm looking out the back, and some guy's pointing to my vehicle, and I see this red stuff spraying all over the back of the vehicle and the trailer. Luckily, I got pulled over, and because it was under warranty, and it was just a seal, they charged me $50, and had me up and running the next day.
Nice.
Yeah. I, of course, I went all the way home so I could get stuff done and see my family, and then had to drive all the way back to Nebraska yesterday and all the way back home. So I'm, dude, done with driving. Done with driving.
Oh, my goodness. That darn Suburban of yours, I tell you what, it's kind of a love-hate relationship.
I know. You're right. I love the darn thing, but yeah, there's days that I just want to drive it off of a really steep cliff. Unbelievable. So, let's talk a little bit about the expo. We had some new vendors there. We showed off some pretty cool things. Why don't you throw out some of your highlights?
Well, what I liked about the expo is the classes this time. We did more hands-on classes, and I have found that fascinating. You know, we had School of Natural Healing that did a tincture class to show people how to make their own tinctures out of herbs. And so that was really fun. And then we had Homestead General that came in, and they did soap making, bread making, and cheese making classes, which were outstanding classes.
Yeah, I have to say they were pretty impressive. And this was actually, for those of you guys, a lot of people obviously didn't go all the way down to Arizona. It was our smallest show. We've never done anything in Arizona before. And the venue we went in was really, really small compared to what we normally do. But we had more classes, so we decided to go less on the speech-type classes and more on the hands-on. And I think it worked out well.
Yeah. Everybody seemed to like it, and the classes were pretty full. And, you know, and then, of course, we had our normal hands-on class that we always have, which is the suturing class by Dr. Bones Nurse Amy, and that one was just, you know, that was always sold out and full. So it was fun. I think that they, you know, all the classes were very informative, and the fact that they were hands-on, you know, to do is to know is kind of my one of the things I like to say all the time. So it's one thing to hear about how to make cheese. It's another thing to actually put your hands in there and do it yourself. So I really enjoyed seeing those hands-on classes.
Yeah, I did too. And so from my side, the coolest highlight, actually I had a couple. Number one is we had an aquaponics company at the event.
Oh, that's cool. Yes.
And we've had aquaponics before, and there's a lady named and I know I'm going to butcher her name. I think it's Grace. I know her first name.
Grace,
and
And
I think it's Psych, but I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce her last name. And they run Aquaponics USA. And I've been looking at aquaponics now for about a year and a half, and I keep wanting to do it, and I've talked to my family about it because I like the idea of not only being able to have stuff year-round, and I still haven't convinced myself that it'll work up here in Iowa. But the second thing is I like the idea of having tilapia that I can grow during the summer in the ponds up here and then pull it out right before winter and then store it to use as chicken feed through the winter to keep the cost down.
Right.
Tilapia breed like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And so, if I could do that, plus tilapia is good to eat yourself. So I thought, you know, that would be a great thing. But I talked to them quite a bit, and I really liked what they had at Aquaponics USA. And they have a really cool website if you want to go and check that out. But what really got me was, and I haven't completely told my wife about this yet, so she's in the other room.
Oh, no.
I know. She's in the other room listening, so she'll hear it now. I went and got a biopod
That is so cool. Matter of fact, I got the flyer on it right here because I was looking at trying to get one since you bought the last one.
Yeah, I know. And the thing about the Biopods, they're really cool. And I recommend if you guys have chickens or any kind of animal that uses that can eat insects, go to YouTube and type in Biopod. And they show a lot of people that have handmade them. So actually, Colorado Ron, I wouldn't buy. I know, hopefully she's not listening. Grace isn't listening. But you can go there, and there's several companies that give instructions how to make them.
Really?
And it's not, okay. Now that I've seen it, it's actually not that difficult.
But yours looks nice and neat. I really like how yours it's got that, you know, nice professional lid. And you can sell me yours.
Yeah, well, maybe I will. but basically what happens with these Biopods is there's a fly called the soldier fly. And it's actually the black soldier fly. And this is a non-biting fly that basically their entire life cycle is like days. And what they basically do is they eat, junk. You know, they eat biological material, you know, poop, you know, manure, and they'll eat vegetables and meat and things like that. And these guys are ravenous. And what will happen is these black soldier flies will lay several hundred eggs. And then the larvae go ahead and they can eat 2 to 4 pounds of biomaterial per day. I mean, that's ravenous. That's completely unbelievable.
2 to 4 pounds?
2 to 4 pounds. On one of these videos, a guy put 15 pounds worth of material in his thing, and it was gone within like 2 days. And then they also did a slow motion thing. They put 2 whole fish, I mean really big fish, in the biomaterial and then time-lapsed videoed it, and they devoured the entire fish down to bones in like 16 hours. 2 of them.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. And so what happens is they go through their life cycle, the 2 separate life cycles. The adults procreate, leave the eggs, the larvae come out. The larvae are just eating machines. They eat all the biomaterial. And then when they go into their final stage, you know, before they become flies again, their natural instinct is to crawl up to the highest point so they're not vulnerable. So all these Biopods have like a small ramp in them. And they walk up to the top and they fall into this holder. And they say you can get about 2 pounds of larvae, of grubs, per day.
Wow.
By doing this. Yeah. I have chickens. 2 pounds would completely offset all my costs for my chickens.
That's a good point.
And, I mean, because corn and everything has gotten so expensive. And it's just a never-ending cycle. What you do is every day you throw more stuff in there. Flies lay more eggs. They turn into the larva. Larva goes ahead and eats. They get to a certain weight level, and they start wanting to become flies. And then they walk up to the thing and fall inside there. And if you need more flies, you let some of them hatch, and you throw the rest into your chickens. Anyway, amazing thing, black soldier flies, Biopods. Look it up. I was completely amazed at how simple the process was. And I was if you go to www.aquaponicsusa.com, there's a video on there of them eating the fish in 24 hours. It is weird to see. I mean, just highly recommend you go out there and check it out. And I will follow up and let everybody know how it goes with this. If it works, I think everybody should start having worms. Growing your grub bed, baby.
Growing your grub bed. Yeah, I'd like to see you try that. What do you think about in the cold weather? That probably doesn't work so good. Huh?
Well, you know, there's not a lot of information on that. It's kind of funny. Everybody that talks about that's the same thing with aquaponics. You go to these websites and you read about them, and almost everybody that's successful and does this aquaponics stuff live in the South. You know, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Southern California. you know, and then you start seeing everybody up north up here where I live up in Maine and, you know, Colorado and everything like that, and people tend to go towards greenhouses as opposed to aquaponics. Although I'm starting to find some websites that do talk about it. So I guess worst case scenario is reading one guy's blog, and he said what he basically did is almost built a greenhouse in his garage. And it was just plastic with wood, 2x4s, and has a small heat lamp in there, because he says that they work best at about 70 degrees, 70 to 75 degrees, which that shouldn't be that difficult if it's sealed in. And he says he can feed his chickens. He has 80 chickens, and he can feed them throughout the entire winter just on the material he throws in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's pretty decent. You know something? If all I have to do is throw in, you know, cow poop and fruits and vegetables and anything I'm not eating and just keep getting it, I don't have to go buy, you know, feed, which gets very expensive in the winter. You know, I'm game. I'm game.
So where do you get the back flies?
I haven't figured that out yet. I got to call Grace. You know, I'm sure there, you know, when I did, at one point, I was going to do beetles for, you know, stripping flesh off of bone, you know, they're flesh-eating beetles,
uh-huh.
You know, to help take care of, you know, when you get a mount, when you kill an animal and you want the skull
or
whatever.
Huh?
And you order them. You know, what you do is when you get all your stuff together, you place an order and it was like $20 or whatever, and they send them to you, and they're still in the final stage, the pupa stage, and then all of a sudden you throw them inside the box, and like 2 days later they all start hatching. My guess is that it's probably the same. You probably order the grubs, and then you kind of just go from there.
Huh, interesting.
But I haven't had a chance to go all the way through the website. I mean,
it's been a long week.
Yeah, well, and I just drove back yesterday, so whatever. So that was one of my highlights. So my second highlight was the Scorpid crossbow.
Of course.
You know, we set up a booth, and the Scorpid crossbow, I've been talking about it, and, it's been up on my Facebook page. I've been calling this the ultimate prepper/survival weapon. And this thing rock socks. If you guys have a chance to check it out, Scorpid, Scorpyd.com. And they have a new crossbow. They have 9 patents on it. And it is the fastest and, you know, has the most kinetic energy of any crossbow out there, and it's silent. And the coolest thing about the whole thing was, you know, we actually got to test it on a bulletproof vest. And we got to watch that sucker punch through a Class 2 bulletproof vest from 20 yards. And, you know, we filmed it. Hopefully I'll get that thing up this coming week. But I didn't actually shoot it. We had Derek from Second Amendment, who actually does the bulletproof vest. I had him physically shoot the darn thing, so that way nobody said that there was any trickery. And we heard it hit the back wall. We heard it go through the bulletproof vest, full through the target, hit the back wall, which is 1 inch of solid oak. And then when we went out there, and everybody goes, "Ooh, that sounds like it didn't went through." And we went out there, it was sticking halfway through the bulletproof vest. Full penetration.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool, scary.
That was pretty impressive when you showed it to me. That was a little crazy.
Yeah, so I think those were my two highlights. Oh, and one more thing. Had nothing to do with the expo. Grandma's kitchen or grandma's diner, whatever it was, on the corner of University, what was it, University of Maine?
No, it was something else. What was that?
Well, whatever.
Yeah, it was not far off of Main. It was right on Main Street in Mesa.
Mesa, yeah, it was like a block from there. This lovely old lady is the owner, and she kept us laughing. I mean, she kept us in stitches. But
yeah,
let me tell you,
Grandma's Cafe, I believe.
Grandma's Cafe. She made. There was a cobbler there that was out of this world. And I know everybody's going, I thought you were diabetic. I actually just had a sliver of it. And
Grandma's Kitchen.
And the crust is still made with lard, and the berries in there and everything else, they don't sweeten them. It's naturally sweetened, and so it wasn't super sugary. It was the bomb.
Yes,
you tried some.
Really
what did
good.
You think?
I have to agree. That was really good. And it was on It was on Main and Country Club Road. Country Club Drive.
Right, which I think was 6. I mean, it was the road, the freeway there. At least what we got. But yeah, that was an awesome bit of food. So I think that was the highlights of the show for me.
Good. Yeah, no, it was fun. We enjoyed it, and I really enjoy watching our little young entrepreneurs doing their thing over there. So we had my boys and another friend of ours. Their son makes these paracord wristbands. What do you call these? Paracord deals on your wrist, and he makes them for hat bands. He's made, you know, necklaces, things like that. So he came down from Denver with his mother and had a booth there selling those. So that was a lot of fun watching those little guys work.
Yeah. I don't think he did as well at this show as he has in past. I mean, at some of the other shows, that kid really cleans up.
Oh, yeah, he cleans up big time. He said he did well, but not as good as he has in the past. But, you know, again, it was definitely not our largest show.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's okay.
It was to be expected, I guess.
So I guess we should throw out there and let people know, when is our next show? You know, we're done for the year. The election is next week. Everybody get out and vote. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but this election is too important to not vote. So go out there and make sure you vote, and let's try to get this country turned back around. But anyway, that's my political stand, my political statement for the day. And then we come into the holiday season. So we are done for the year, and our first event for next year will be April 25th and 26th, and that will be in Arlington, Texas. That was a great event for us. We love the people in Texas. So we're going back to Arlington. And we'll be announcing by the end of November the 4 stops that we'll be doing for 2013. But we all need a break. It's been too intense this year.
Yeah, we need to reevaluate where we're putting these to get the most educational, you know, information out there to the to the masses, I guess.
Well,
so.
for the big events, yeah. Here, just so you guys know, and don't hold either one of us to it. I think the goal for next year, hopefully, is just to do 4 big events, and that'll be our base every single year, and keep growing those markets. And then we're in conversations right now. We're working to see if we can get enough sponsorship for it, is to maybe do a road show. And that road show will be maybe half of the size of what Mesa was. You know, and what will happen is we'll actually ask community members like you guys to come to us and say, hey, look, we can get you a free venue if you'll come and bring your stuff here and bring a couple of speakers. And we'll get out on the road and try to hit a bunch, 10 or 12 stops. But it's very expensive and very time-consuming to do these large events and try to get 50 to 100 vendors and set up 60 classes. And, we all have families. As you guys know from week before last, Colorado got another one on the way. and it's a lot of time to be away from home, and it's stressful on our families, too. And as much as we want to help you guys get prepared, you know, we got to make sure we're taking care of our stuff at home, too.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the game plan for next year. So put it on your calendar, April 25th, 26th, Arlington, Texas. So that way you know which one the first event is, and then we'll kind of go from there. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I want to cover one last thing. So today we have Jackie Clan. We'll be talking to her in about 10 minutes. And, it's really, really cool. When we have Jackie on, it's like we're talking to our next-door neighbor. We always just kind of pick it up and just go out there. And, we want to make sure that we're covering, because winter's coming. Winter's here. I don't know about you, but we seem to completely skip fall, and we're into the winter.
No, we're good. Well, it's nice and sunny out. Excuse me. It's nice and sunny out today.
Well, that's good. And then after Jackie will come back, we want to talk a little bit today about Hurricane Sandy and all the devastation that that's caused.
Yeah.
And we'll do your Homestead Hunters.
Okay.
And then wrap it up for the day. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Knock it out.
Well, before we call Jackie, I wanted to hit one more thing. You had something cool happen on Tuesday. Why don't you tell us what happened on Tuesday?
Yes. it was, you know, New York Times has been, New York Times Magazine has been out, and they have done an article on the Expo. And what had fascinated the writer was that, I guess they weren't expecting this, but they said that we seemed like a normal family. So, anyway, and you got to remember, some of these stories just never make it. And so, you know, this was back in, I don't know how long ago. And so I'd kind of forgotten about it. And, you know, it's come back around, and they called me the other day and said that they wanted to come up and take a picture for the article. And I said, yeah, sure, that'd be fine. And they said, well, we want to do something a little different. I said, what's that? And they said, we want to pay a crew to come out to your house, and we want to take all your emergency preparedness stuff and set it on the front lawn and take a picture of your family with all your preparedness stuff. And I said, are you serious? I wasn't sure at first. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And, no, they said they did. And so I said, I talked to them with my wife and I said, okay, let's do it. So Tuesday they were here. So you gotta remember, we got back from the expo on Monday afternoon and we didn't have much downtime. And then Tuesday morning about 7:30, we had a crew here with a crane and all this stuff. They were doing aerial shots, and it was pretty cool. They came in and they emptied out. They didn't empty out everything. They emptied out about a third of our stuff out into the front yard, and took pictures of our family with all the product. So it was pretty cool.
And do we know when that thing's supposed to be coming out?
They said, you know, you got to remember now, this is all according to news and stuff. Something big happens, it gets pushed back. But they said it's supposed to be the end of November, one of the Sunday. It's going to be on a Sunday issue. According to somebody, it's supposed to be a double-page feature, so I don't know what that means. But you know, to me, it's probably – my luck is probably going to be in the back next to the classifieds or something. But they say it's going to be a double-page feature on the Sunday magazine. So it'll be, I think it was November 20-something is what they told me.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool. Hopefully it'll help get some more people coming to the expos.
Yeah, and you know, I told you, it you know, guys, we had a great article that came out while we were in Mesa, Arizona, that was written by an affiliate of MSNBC, and it actually went national.
Yeah.
I think it's on my Facebook page. I don't know if it's on yours, Colorado, but I know it's also on the Self-Reliance Expo page if you guys want to check it out. And, you know, again, not to get overly political, but, you know, typically self-reliance/prepping/survival expos don't get really good reviews from left-leaning media. And MSNBC is about as far left as you can go. And so, you know, I wasn't expecting much, but it was a wonderfully written, very, very flattering and complimentary review. No negative.
Yeah. No, it was great. And I was really excited about that, and I hope we make sure we capture all that.
Yeah, we need to get it up on the main webpage. So we need to get one of our guys to take a static shot of it and post it. So it, you know, because the problem with these things are once the link is gone, you know, they kill the link. Then we click on it, and it says, you know, not found. So we need to get a static impression of it, so that way we can say, ooh, look, somebody gave us a good review one time.
One time, exactly. Ooh, buddy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But it shows that we're moving the right direction because. Yeah, I think I mentioned the Colorado Run when we were driving, and I actually have another one up now. I've been invited to speak at not only Iowa State to an economics group who listens to Backwoods Home Magazine's radio show. The teacher does, and I guess she's been having her students talk about it and everything else because of some of the things we cover. And we're very flattered about that. But on November 17th, I was actually invited recently to go up and speak to a group of preppers who have a prepper club in Newton, Iowa now. And they rent out a ballroom. They got enough people to rent out a ballroom. Talking about things changing. You know, 2 years ago, preppers didn't even talk to each other. You know, and now here we are 2 years later, and preppers are renting a ballroom because they've got so many people to do classes. And they've invited me to go down there and speak at that one. So I'm going down there on November 17th.
Good for you.
So, yeah, I'm glad that people are listening and we're helping. You know, you help them because you go through it and you got a large family, so they get to listen to you and they get to listen to me, all my mistakes, and learn what not to do. Works for everybody, right?
That's a win-win.
That's a win-win, right. And now when I make these mistakes, I don't feel as foolish because I can, even though I make a big mistake and, you know, spend some money that I don't have to or do whatever, I can say, you know something, I'm doing it for the good cause. And it makes me feel a little bit better for being such an idiot sometimes. So, and that's, and guys, isn't that what it's all about, making yourself feel good? Come on. Listen. So if we can help out a little bit, I'm happy to do so. So, well, I'm glad. Did you get all the stuff put back away?
Yes. It wasn't until we started at 7:30 in the morning. We finished about 7:30 at night. So
wow, that's pretty intense.
It was, and you know, I gotta hand it to them. You know, they're really picky about their pictures. So they made sure the light was right, and they took all kinds of pictures. So it was pretty amazing. It was a lot of fun.
You know, I was when it was happening, I was thinking about you because there has been some freaky weather going through there, and I was like, man, I just hope it doesn't rain or doesn't do anything while stuff pulled out.
Perfect. It was just perfect weather. It was about 75 degrees and sunny all day long.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, good to go. Well, we'll have to – please keep us updated, you know, so we can – I'd love to see that article. I'm trying to figure out where I would even find – it's the New York Times, right?
New York Times Magazine, yeah.
Oh, it's New York Times Magazine, not the newspaper.
That's what they said, so.
I didn't even know they had a magazine. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, it's on the – I had to look it up as well, and they have a pretty good webpage with a lot of stuff on there, so.
Okay. Well, then, guys, as soon as we find out when it's out and everything else, we'll inform you, we'll scan it, we'll get it up and everything else. Hopefully it slants as well as the MSNBC article, and then then we can say we hit a home run for the end of the year. That would be nice.
Yeah, it's the same people that own the New York Times newspaper, and they have like a colored, you know, lawn magazine that they also do that goes into the Sunday paper.
Oh, okay. So it's the insert. It's like Parade or one of those things. It's the color insert on Sunday.
I believe that's what it is, but I'm not sure.
Totally understand now. And still now, so I still have to figure out how to get a Sunday Times. New York Times.
Yeah.
The Times. Whatever. It's all good.
It's
all right.
Figure it out.
All right, guys. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here, and as soon as we come back, we're going to be calling Jackie Clay live on her cell phone. Hopefully she answers, and she's not taking care of the animals. So we'll get back to you in 3 minutes after these commercials.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Survival is not about the end of the world. It's not about a hypothetical plane crash or the latest violent storm. Survival is about the satisfaction of knowing you can take care of yourself and your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. CampingSurvival.com was started in 1956. No, not the .com part, the survival part. CampingSurvival.com has over 17,000 urban, wilderness, and preparedness items. Supreme customer service. Very low shipping and no games. We look around to make sure we have the lowest prices, and CampingSurvival.com is 100% USMC veteran owned. Don't base your survival on the latest spring up on the internet company. Do business with an authority on survival. CampingSurvival.com. Confidence born on preparation. Order today and use the promo code E2E for an additional 5% off your order.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation?
What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey guys, we're back with Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. You there, Colorado?
Here, how's it going?
All right, bro. All right, well, let's get this done. Let's call Jackie. I miss Jackie, so let's go ahead and give her a buzz and see if she answers. You ready?
Yep.
I'm getting good at this technical stuff. There's the ring.
Wow.
I know. Almost impressive.
Hello?
Hey, Jackie. It's Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron.
Hi there.
How you
How's
doing?
How's it going?
It's going fine.
Good. We got you on live.
Okay.
Just wanted to give you a warning before you said something rude.
I always have to take that in consideration. You know, I don't want to misspeak myself.
Well, that's what I love about Jackie. You see her picture and everything else, and you're like, oh, she just looks like such a... And then she comes out, and she pops something out of her mouth, and you're like, oh, but it's so funny that you're like, because it catches you off guard. Love that about you, Jackie. You shoot from the hip.
It's scary.
Yeah, so how's everything going up there? You starting to feel the weather yet?
Yeah, we've had 4 inches of snow back-to-back, so we were getting a little bit nervous because we had a whole lot we wanted to get done before winter. And luckily, it started to melt, so we're busily stashing stuff so it doesn't get buried, because when the snow comes here this time of year, it usually stays till April.
Yeah, it you know, I don't know about you, but it definitely feels like we're going to have an early and long winter.
Yeah, that's what my beaver buddies are saying, and lots of snow.
Yeah. Which is kind of why we wanted to give you a call and talk to you this week was, you know, I think that last year kind of spoiled everybody. You know, it was such a mild winter for everybody. And, you know, I don't think people are as prepared this year. At least I'm not seeing it where I live for the winter. And we thought we'd just kind of talk through some winterizing sort of things with you and kind of help people get in the mindset of getting prepared for what looks like might be a pretty severe winter.
Well, we always try to prepare for a severe winter, and a winter like last year was wonderful. It's like a present from God. You know, Will was able to work outside building things all winter. He built a couple of wood-fired stock tank heaters and fixed a lot of equipment that needed welding. We buy junk equipment, and then he spends all winter fixing it. So our mindset is, you know, always be prepared for that terrible winter, and if it doesn't come, great. You know, so, you know, we try to have 2 years' worth of dry firewood split in the woodshed every fall, and we're a little behind. We've only got a year's worth. We've got another year's worth laying cut, but it's not split yet and stashed away. But, you know, I talk to so many people that are not ready for, like, an ice storm or a blizzard, and I can't quite understand that mentality. Like those poor people that got nailed by Sandy out on the East Coast. And every night I go to bed and I wonder how many of them had even minimal preparation for being without power, where millions of them are now. And I feel so sorry for them, but at the same time, it's like, what were you thinking?
No, and we were just talking about that before, which is, you know, if we had done an expo on the East Coast this week, we probably would have sold everything three times over. Because people only, you know, people don't prepare. It's called prepping. You know, what they do is they're reactive as opposed to proactive. And so after everything's done and everybody's suffered, then they run out and go buy everything. And, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I see, too. And it's scary and it's sad because they're setting themselves up to be so miserable when they could be very comfortable and, you know, ride her out. But you can't just run to the store and grab a bunch of food and the store's out of food. You know, you've got no way to keep your house warm. And I just feel so sorry for the kids. They, you know, they don't know anything about preparing for emergencies. You know, and we prepare, but I don't like calling it a prepper because, you know, we just set up to provide for our family. You know, worst case scenario, we try to think ahead and just try to keep preparing for anything that could happen. And, you know, my grandmother used to call it stocking up, and I'm sure everybody's grandmother stocked up in the old days. When times were a little better, you just kind of socked away a few things, you know, and, you know, had candles so you could have light or a kerosene lamp if the power went out, if you had power.
Right.
I know my husband Will's parents or grandparents didn't even have power until 1950. So you think of, oh, they lived without power back in the olden days. Well, 1950 wasn't that olden.
Well, to my kids it would be, but you're right.
Yeah.
It's not that far from our wheelhouse. Let me ask you a question, Jackie. You talked about a year's worth of wood. And I'll tell you what, you know, coming from Texas before I got up here to Iowa, if someone said, do you have a year's worth of wood? If I had a half a dozen Duraflame logs in my garage, I would say, yep, I'm stocked up. Up here in Iowa, you know, I have probably 10, 15 cord, you know, stacked and still don't feel like I'm in the right area as far as how much I should have. What for your area, what do you think a good rule of thumb is for a decent supply? What do you consider a year's worth of wood?
On a horrible cold winter, we burn about 8 cords. So we try to have 16 cords cut and split in the building so it's dry. Trying to burn wet, old, nasty wood that you've dug out of the snowbank just doesn't work. I mean, it eventually will burn. It's like burning greenwood. It will burn, but it uses so many calories to produce a fire with wet greenwood or just wet wood that it's robbing your house of heat. So, and you talk about down in Texas, when we lived in New Mexico, we had probably 8 cords stacked up, and, you know, it was out on the high plains, so obviously there wasn't any wood, but a neighboring rancher was tearing out miles of fence, and the fence posts were old, old hard cedar, and they'd been in the ground for like 85 years. And
wow.
This friend of ours with the ranch manager, he said, oh, the boss just wants me to put them in a pile and burn them. If you want them for firewood, you could sure have them. So we took our stock trailer over there and loaded her up. And we had some really cold ice storms there. You know, we lived out on the plains, so we had the wind. And we'd get freezing rain. And you know, we had a couple of blizzards out there. So, yeah, just because you live down south somewhere doesn't mean you're not going to need some firewood. I look at these people in Virginia, they got like 34 inches in one crack and go, oh, my God.
Yeah, and you made a good point, though. Most people that cut their wood think, I can just cut it and leave it out there and I'll just grab it as I need it. But that is not an efficient way to do things. I mean,
it's got to be kept dry.
Yeah,
you know, whether it's on stacked on pallets and has a tarp over it, we like it in a building because then the tarp can't blow off, it can't leak, and the wood is dry. And you get as much possible heat out of a stick of wood as you can, as opposed to digging it out of the snowbank and using half of the calories to dry the wood so it'll burn in the first place, or else getting your firewood in the fall and it's still kind of green, and you saw it up and you stack it up, but still it's green and it sizzles and spots, and you know, it just doesn't give you the BTUs it would if it was dry. But there again, it takes a little bit of stocking up ahead of time as opposed to preparing by just running out and getting a bunch of wood and throwing a tarp over it and say, there.
Yeah. And you know, I'm becoming a personal believer that a lot of people up here either have electric, or a lot of them have natural gas or propane that heat their house. And they think, yeah, or, you know, and I'm still a big believer that everybody should have go ahead and just get, if it lasts you 5 years, who cares? Have a stack of a couple cord of wood, because if you run out of propane or something ends up happening or the power goes out, it's going to get awfully cold really quick.
Well, a lot of people don't think about their furnace. They think, well, you know, not everybody is lucky like you and I that have a wood fire. You know, I cook with wood, too, so we've got two sources of wood heat. But a lot of people have a fuel oil or a propane furnace that relies on electricity in order to ignite the flame or to blow the heat through the house. So the power goes down, they've got no heat at all. And I think everybody should have some sort of backup heat so that their house doesn't freeze. You know, the pipes freeze, they freeze. You know, there's a lot of vent-free, safe propane heaters you can get to have on hand if you don't have any way to have wood heat. You know, there's the big heater buddy, the big buddy, and that you can use on, you know, like a 100-pound gas propane cylinder. You know, if you had one of those in the basement and one in the house, you might be a little chilly. It's not going to keep your house 74, but you will survive and not be too miserable. And if you have one in the basement, if you have a basement, your pipes aren't going to freeze. I've been through an ice storm where we had a fuel oil furnace, and the power went out, and all our pipes froze, and we had like a foot of water in the basement, which froze, and there was ice on it. And when the power went back on and the phones came back up, I called my dad, who lived 1,400 miles away, and I learned to solder copper pipes over the phone. But it's not an experience I would recommend for everyone.
No. Yeah, that sounds like quite the event.
It was not fun.
Well, let me ask are you done canning for the year?
Oh, I'm never done canning. I'm done canning a lot of the produce out of our garden. I finished tomatoes last week. I made chipotle mesquite barbecue sauce. And I could have eaten it, the whole thing, with a spoon. It was that good.
Oh, nice.
But I still got some cabbage I'm going to put up, and some squash and some pumpkins. And then pretty soon it's going to be deer time. And with the grace of God, maybe we'll have a deer to can up.
Yeah.
We've got two pigs to butcher, so.
Nice.
I'll be canning that.
You mentioned cabbage. Do you guys make your own sauerkraut?
Yes, sir. Oh. I also make Amish coleslaw. It's a canned coleslaw, and it's to die for.
Oh, is that in your book?
Yeah. No, it isn't, actually.
Oh, no.
I discovered it after I wrote the book. But it is in one of the last issues of Backwoods Home Magazine.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, we'll try it.
Not the latest issue, but the issue before that. It's in the pickling article. But
okay.
It's really crispy and good, and I use it for stir fries and to fill egg rolls and all kinds of stuff, and, of course, make coleslaw with, and it's very easy.
Well, great. Yeah, you know, I'll have to do that, because I don't know why, but I've had such a craving for cabbage lately, but sauerkraut, and I just I've been watching videos on doing it, and I was hoping to pick up a kraut Croc at the expo. I've just been really wanting to do it. Now they say, I've read a couple of videos that said that it's not good to can sauerkraut, but I'm pretty sure you can sauerkraut, right?
Yes, I do. In the old days, they just dipped into the crock and then got their sauerkraut out and pressed the brine down over the kraut and kept it weighted so that the cabbage didn't stick up bottom of the brine, because if that happens, it's going to start spoiling. But no, I can it. There's a lot of people that say, oh, you lose the nutrition by canning it. But my feeling is once you can it, it's there for good. It's not going to spoil. A dead mouse isn't going to fall in it. You know, it's good forever. And if you lose a little bit of nutrition, so be it. But I'd rather have food than have no food.
Well, does the dead mouse add any flavor if it does fall in?
Yeah, it tastes like sauerkraut.
It still tastes like sauerkraut. There you go. So
actually, they're alive when they do fall in, but then they get pickled.
So I've never had pickled mouse. That might be something to try this year.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
No, actually, a mouse can't really fall into it because you do have a weighted plate down on the kraut or a bag full of water. I was just being nasty.
So the what about apples? We're still getting apples down here. I don't know about you guys, but we're still getting apples.
No, our apples are done. It's frozen. We've had low teens here, so no more apples.
No more apples. But, what are your favorite things to do with apples?
Ooh, yummy. Well, it depends on what kind of an apple it is. Some apples are summer apples, and, of course, they have ripened and either fallen off the tree or you've used them by now. They come ripe usually in late August, like a yellow transparent is one common summer apple. But then you get the fall and winter apples, and a lot of the different varieties we'll keep in a cool location like a root cellar or unheated basement all winter. You know, you take your Honeycrisp or Trailman or Frostbite, some of the really good apples will keep over winter as long as they're stored where it's real cool. They like it cool and humid. But if you can't store all of them, and hardly anybody can, you know, of course you have applesauce. I can apple pie filling. I can sliced apples. I dehydrate apple slices. You know, there's pickled or spiced apple rings. They're like a cinnamony apple ring.
Oh, that sounds good.
And you've got your spiced crab apples. So you've got like a cinnamony sweet little crab apple. They're really pretty. Then there's apple jelly, of course. You can't forget the apple jelly. I make smooth applesauce and chunky applesauce because some of us like the smooth and some like the chunky. There's lots to do with an apple.
Yeah,
I like
sounds
the dehydrated and canned apple slices. You can use for apple bread, apple upside down cake. You know, there's pastries that use an apple cinnamon filling. There's a lot you can do with an apple.
I love apples. Apples are
one of
my favorites.
That's why we have like 30 trees.
Oh, nice.
People say, what are you going to do with 30 trees? If you get 10 bushels per tree, do the math.
Yeah.
Well, I can grow trees, but I can't grow field corn. And pigs and cattle and goats like apples pretty good. So if we ever get enough, we'll, of course, barter and sell some of them, but the ones that aren't very nice or bruised or damaged will go in for feed for our animals. So we don't like to waste too much.
Nice. No, I agree. You know, it's just curious. You know, it's kind of interesting how everybody does, you know, gets prepared for winter and all the different, all the different little tricks and things like that. One of the questions I had is, do you have like a root cellar, or have you ever done a root cellar?
Yes and yes. Okay. Our root cellar is part of our basement. Our basement is unheated and insulated. And my pantry slash root cellar is in the northeast corner of our basement. And we use the top. It's luckily our basement is not real humid. So we use the top, from like knee level on up for my canned goods. And from the knee level on down and a little higher on the other side, we've got garbage cans that have big bags of flour and sugar in. And we also have bins for our potatoes and carrots and our apples. So we store all that in the pantry slash root cellar. But our apples like it better in the basement part where it's a little bit warmer but not warm. And our squash and melons we store right in the house. They like it where it's a little warmer and not humid. And we've got squash that have stored over a year that way, as opposed to in the basement, maybe we'd get 6-7 months out of it. So that extra heat for the squash really helped. But you talk about little tricks to getting prepared for winter. Of course, the economy is in the toilet. And we found a really good deal at a pumpkin farm. We hauled in 2 tons of pumpkins. We went out in the field and picked pumpkins.
Wow.
And we paid $40 a ton or a truckload. And we went out and picked pumpkins 2 days in a row and brought them home and made a straw little house for them down in our new barn, which still doesn't have a roof on it, but it's headed that way. Anyway, we put them in the new barn and built a straw house around them and buried them with about 2 feet of straw. And we're feeding them to our pumpkins and our cattle and our chickens and our goats.
That's a great segue, Jackie. And I was just going to ask that. So I have chickens, and you know, Walmart. For those of you guys that Walmart buys pumpkins by the megaton now. I mean, and like my little Walmart here probably has 20-25 boxes still filled with pumpkins, and they're down to like $1.50 a piece. And there's some sizable pumpkins. And I had heard that chickens will love those things.
Yes, they do. But I think I'd wait till it get down a little cheaper than a dollar.
Yeah, well, I mean, but even at a dollar, considering the weight of these things, it's still cheaper than feed.
Feed is very expensive.
Oh, my goodness. It is so expensive. You know, I'm looking at winter. And I was just getting all paranoid and going, you know, what do you feed your goats and your chickens this winter when feed prices, because the drought is so high? And then, you know, if it was a mild winter like last year, it wouldn't be so bad. You just keep letting them graze and, you know, and free range. But it doesn't. I'm going to anticipate that I'm actually going to have to supplement this winter. And so, you know. Someone said pumpkins are great, and I think I will. I think in 2 weeks they'll probably be down relatively inexpensive as they try to get rid of them. So, but you're
saying if they frost a little bit, you know, where they start getting soft, they'll throw them out. And I used to go, and not to Walmart because this was in the olden days, but there was Kmart and some of the big box grocery stores that had bins of pumpkins. And the day after Halloween, I'd go there with a truck, and they would give them to me just to get them out of there, especially if they'd kind of frozen a little bit where they were getting a little soft.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to haul tons every winter or, you know, late fall. So, you know, you might approach the produce manager and just say, you know, I've got livestock. I could use your pumpkins. What kind of deal would you make me?
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you know, we don't have a lot of pumpkin patches up here, but I'm sure, you know, even some of the 2 or 3 pumpkin patches that we have up here may cut you a deal like you did.
Right. After Halloween, the market for pumpkins goes in the toilet. You know, a few people buy them for decorations for Thanksgiving, but that's it. You know, the rush is over.
Yeah. Speaking of pumpkins, let me throw one more question out there. How does pumpkin freeze? I mean, if I pureed it and made a puree, so for pumpkin pies and things later, does that can or store well? I've never tried.
they don't recommend you canning the pumpkin puree anymore because it makes such a dense product that they say that the inside of the jar, the very center, may not heat well enough for safe storage. But what you do is you put it in chunks, and then when you go to use it, you just puree it then. You know, throw in the blender, just mash it with a fork, and that works fine. But it also, the puree does freeze real well, you know, if you've got a freezer. But I lost a freezer full of food because of an ice storm in the middle of the winter, and I didn't realize the freezer had quit. And, I mean, you know, I realized we didn't have power, but duh, you don't think about your freezer in the basement. Then it's like, oh, my God, we threw quilts over it and everything. But I canned almost everything in it, but we ended up losing food. So I quickly switched from freezing everything because it was easier to canning it up because it would stay good forever.
Okay. And so if I were to can pumpkin, do you cut it up into chunks raw and then can it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's raw pumpkin. You don't cook the pumpkin. Because, like, when you puree it, you bake it, and then you puree it. And I was wondering if you were talking about, like, cooked chunks or just raw chunks.
Yeah, well, there's two ways you can do it. One's the hot pack, and we're heated in boiling water for a couple minutes, and then pack the hot pumpkin in the jar with the boiling cooking liquid. Or you can raw pack it, too, put the chunks in, and just pour boiling water over it.
Good to go.
And that's what I do now. Just I'm not real sure that we need to be quite that safe from ourselves, not the canned pureed pumpkin.
Yeah.
But I go, what the heck, it's not that big a deal to put it in chunks instead of pureeing it.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So let me ask, we kind of jumped into animals. Sorry I jumped in there, Colorado.
No, you're fine. Go for it.
You know, so we're going into winter, and we talked about winterizing your chickens about the last time we talked to you about making sure that there's straw inside there and that we're keeping them out of direct wind and things like that. You know, what about your other animals? Like, what about goats and things like that? Do they survive fairly decent in the cold, in the, you know, if you give them a doghouse or something they can make shelter in? Do they do fairly well, or do you need to make something bigger for them to keep them? And do they continue to produce milk through the winter season?
Yeah, if you've got good shelter for them and good bedding in that shelter, they will do good. I think I'd like to see them in a little better than a doghouse. That would be for one small goat. And actually, if you've got two or more, they lay together, they cuddle together, and they help warm each other. So if you've got a lot of nice straw in their shed and they can cuddle down out of the wind, and they'll be fine. And, yes, they will produce all winter. The main thing is if you live in a real cold area, when you wash the udder and put Tit Dip on it, when you're done milking, make sure that the udder is dry before they go outside where there might be wind or something that could chap their teats or even freeze the water on them. So make sure the teats are dry before they go outdoors.
Okay, that's actually good advice. So when you're talking, when you say you'd like to see something a little bit more, you're just talking about so there's a little bit more air around them and things like that, so they kind of self-insulate.
Yeah, and so if they stand up, you know, if your doghouse is big enough, they can stand up and move around, you know, turn around, you know, that would be fine. But the main thing is so that they can stand, they can be standing up. They don't want to have to lay down all the time if they're in shelter. They want to be able to move around a little bit. You know, just think of how you would be if the only warm place was a place you had to crouch down in.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, and then eating. You're just doing the pumpkins and things like that. I mean, do you supplement their diet during the winter any different than, because they're obviously not getting as much green in their diet during the winter as they do, like they do in the spring and the summer?
Yeah. We give our goats free choice hay morning and night. We give them all they'll eat until about noon, and then we give them all they'll eat for another 3 or 4 hours after that, you know, towards evening. And we also, you know, we're giving them the pumpkins, and we also give them a little grain because all of our does are going to be bred soon. and it's called flushing the does. You feed them extra grain as you're coming towards breeding season, and they ovulate more eggs that way. The same goes for sheep, too. And so usually our goats will produce twins or triplets in the spring. And, of course, once they're bred, then you're trying to build their body up. And if they're milking also, you know, you're going to have to give them grain also in order so they don't tear their body down trying to produce milk.
Right. This is going to be an interesting winter for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting winter for everyone, I'm afraid.
Now, what about this wood-fired stock tank heater that you guys, your article in this last issue, is it so cold up there you got to keep this puppy going all the time or what?
Well, we burn it every day when it's real cold. Will built three of them, and he's going to build one more. We got one in each one of our stock tanks now, and it'll form a layer of ice on the tank at night. But in the morning, when we're doing chores, you start all the stock tank heaters, and within 15 minutes, the animals can drink ice warm water, and
wow.
The water. You know, we keep tossing a little wood in it. You know, periodically through the day, and it keeps that tank. So it's almost like a hot tub if it's not real cold out. You can see the steam coming from it. The water itself, of course, isn't warm, you know, that warm. But when it's, you know, zero out, that water will steam. It looks so inviting.
Well, how did you keep the water from freezing before you put this big go?
We didn't.
Wood fire.
That was a real pain in the, you know what? Because every morning, we'd have to go out with an axe and chop the ice and take your bare hands and pick the ice up and throw it out of the tank. And, you know, so the animals could drink fresh water. And, of course, when you're throwing ice out maybe twice a day, if it's real cold, that water's going to freeze before chore time again.
Wow.
And so we'd have to chop it and throw the ice out again. And, of course, the stock tank level goes down faster that way because you're throwing frozen water out. So you'd have to haul the hoses over to the tank and fill it up and then drain all the hoses so they didn't freeze. So Will remembered that his dad's chore as a young child was to go around and put corn cobs in the old stock tank heaters because they didn't have electric in those days. And so he would go down and put corn cobs soaked in oil and start the fires and warm up the heaters. And Will thought, why can't I build one just like that? So he did. And it took a little tweaking, but he finally got it so it was perfect. And they really, really do the job.
Nice.
It sure cuts down our chore time, I'll tell you.
Well, let me ask you, Jackie. You know, this is a question that I'm sure a lot of people have. And so this is something I'd like to settle, and there never really is the right answer on this one. But there's a lot of homesteaders out there, and some people go to the south, and some people go to the north. Can you tell me some of the benefits? I mean, it seems like it's a lot of extra work preparing for winter up there. What are some of the benefits of being north versus being in the south? And why did you choose way up there?
Less people, cheaper land. Northern Minnesota has a reputation for being oh so cold in the winter and having bugs and you know, there's all this stuff that's going to suck your blood, you know, black flies and gnats and ticks. And so, you know, a lot of people don't want to live up here. They don't want to fight the winter. And so the land is cheaper than it is in most areas down south. But on the other hand, you know, because, you know, it is cold up here, we don't have poisonous snakes. We don't have, you know, the heat, the humidity in the summertime. So we've got longer days in the summer, so our produce grows faster. It's sort of like in Alaska where you have summers that have no night. We have a lot longer growing season because of the long day length. It looks, when you look at it on paper, our growing season is 90 days, But a lot of times, you know, in the summertime, it gets light here at 5 o'clock in the morning or earlier, and it'll be still light at 10 o'clock at night. So our plants in the garden just grow like crazy.
Oh, okay.
You know, we don't have tornadoes up here as a whole. There could be an occasional one, but it's not like, you know, Tornado Alley through the Midwest. We don't have hurricanes. You know, we don't have volcanoes. So there's a lot of pluses for us.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I have one last subject I want to hit before we end this hour, Jackie. Yeah, earlier you mentioned I didn't want to jump into with it right away because, you know, we had a lot of different things we wanted to cover on winter. But you said that you were hoping that you would get a deer for the season. You know, because of the extreme drought throughout the Midwest this year, there's been a massive deer kill off because of the midge fly. Do you guys have the midge fly up there, and are you guys experiencing it up there?
No.
So I don't even know if you know what it is. Have you heard of the midge fly?
Yes, I've heard of it, but we don't have it, no.
Okay, you're very lucky. I mean, in Michigan, they had like 900 white-tailed deer just drop dead over the last couple of weeks, and we're in the thousands here in Iowa. And,
oh, boy.
And, you know, basically what it is, it's a small fly that lives on the edge of ponds, and usually it doesn't get dry enough where it recedes back enough where they can come out in mass. And basically they bite the deer one time, and it creates, you know, all kinds of symptoms, and they lose their appetite, and they have a huge, much bigger fear of man. They get mouth ulcers, and then excessive saliva, and then they start hemorrhaging. They get fever, and they hemorrhage, and they die. And it's like within a day or two of being bit.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, we just had up by a lake by our house where they found like 200 of them, just dead deer lying around the lake.
Oh, boy, that's tough.
Yeah, so I didn't know how bad. I mean, I know it's Michigan's got it, we've got it, Illinois's got it. You know, that we've had it really bad, and I wasn't sure if it had gotten up there yet.
No, it's a little too cold for them, thank God.
Yeah, I guess you know, there's blessings with being up north and having a little bit of cold, huh?
Yes, there is.
Now, when you guys get your deer and everything, do you guys just hang it and age it and do that, or do you actually butcher it and can it? What do you do with your venison?
We hang it. Our deer season is cold enough that you can actually hang it in the barn. And, you know, I skin it immediately when it's warm. Of course, it's field dressed. And the next morning, I go out and start cutting quarters off. I bring a quarter at a time in the house and then cut it up and can it.
So you do can it immediately. Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people over the last couple of weeks saying that's exactly what they're doing because it lasts longer. Is they almost do exactly what you do, let it cool for a couple of days, and then bring it in a quarter at a time and actually are canning it as opposed to butchering it up and freezing it or grinding it up for hamburger meat.
Yeah. Well, I do grind quite a bit of the, I won't call it scrap meat, but, you know, like the round steak areas, the shoulders, the neck. I usually grind that, and then I fry it up in Canada's hamburger. And I use that, you know, like for tacos and sloppy joes, and there's a lot of different uses. And it's so handy because it's already cooked. All you have to do is fish it out of the jar, put it in a frying pan, and then heat it up that way, and, you know, you're good to go. It's so convenient that way. You know, you work your butt off for about a week getting it canned up, but then when you want a quick meal, you want stew, all you have to do is take your stewing meat and dump it in the, you know, drain it, dump it in a pan, throw in some canned carrots, some canned tomatoes, whatever you want, you know, potato dices, and, you know, you're eating in 15 minutes as opposed to going through the whole thing and making stew that takes you a couple hours.
So you can actually can hamburger meat?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You bet. Yeah.
See, once again, Bubba shows his ignorance. That's okay. I wouldn't even. I don't know why it would be so much different from chunk meat, but I mean, in my head, as you said it, I was kind of trying to picture it, and I'm like, yuck.
My wife does that. Yeah, she mixes in the tacos, you know, the taco seasoning too. So we have the, you know, she makes her taco salads or whatever, and she just makes that. So it's already pre-seasoned. Yeah. She just dumps it out and heats it up.
Very, very good. And especially with venison, a lot of my, almost all of my venison I can with a teaspoon or a tablespoon, depending on if it's quarts or pints, of dried beef soup stock, you know, the powder. And some people don't like the taste of venison. They say it tastes gamey or whatever. So I've found that it really enhances the flavor to add that powdered beef stock to it. And I also, you know, do make the taco seasoned meat, and that's really convenient. You want tacos, you just dump it out in your frying pan, break up the ground meat a little bit, heat it up, and you're ready to stuff tacos or enchiladas or tamales. You know, there's a lot of different things you can use that with.
Very, very cool. Okay. Well, you know, we need to get going here, but do you have any, like, last-minute tips? You know, talking to people who are getting prepared for winter, other than, guys, get prepared for winter, you're running out of time. You know, do you have any last-minute tips or tricks that you might be able to give to the audience?
Well, you know, make sure your house is as airtight as you can. You know, if you've got some leaking little spots, cracks, whatever, get out some caulking and caulk them up. If you live in cold country where it's windy, get some plastic on the outside of your windows if you have old windows. Store a little extra food. Get a little extra source of heat in case your power goes out from a storm. It can happen to any of us, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm going to be ready with my wood, and I've caulked, but now I think I need to go ahead and I'm going to start building some frames for the outside of the windows to put plastic. We have, it's funny, you spend the money on getting double planed windows because they're supposed to do it, but you can still get a leak through there. It still gets the cold air passing through.
Yeah, you can. And, you know, every little teeny thing you can do to keep your house warmer means you burn less fuel and stay warmer.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on with us again, Jackie. We always appreciate having you on.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Have
Thanks,
fun, guys.
Jackie.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right. Well, that was Jackie Clay. Let's take a quick break, Colorado. When we come back, we'll go ahead and continue the conversation and finish talking up about not only Hurricane Sandy, but we still have your Homestead Hunter to do.
Yep. Sounds good.
So we'll be back after the next three commercials, guys.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill. over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wondermill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Yeah.
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going and what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back with Bubba Da Vinci and Colorado Ron. You're listening to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. That was a pretty good conversation. I always like talking to Jackie, Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, it always fascinates me because she's way up north. You know, she's north Michigan. And so,
no,
Minnesota. So she's north Minnesota, so it's like hardcore up there. Sorry, I've been looking at Michigan all day, but anyway, I guess if you're up there, it's no big deal because you're in it, but you know, being down here in Colorado, it just seems like it's so harsh up there, the weather, and it's just fascinating to listen to some of her stories about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I don't know if I can handle it. I mean, I went up there bear hunting up in Canada and had 3 days in fall that were freezing, and they're talking about, you know, 15, 20 below during the winter time, and I'm like, well, why? Why would you be up here? Well, what's
exactly
the point of this? And I don't care. You'd have to give me the land. You might even have to pay me in order to live for 5 or 6 months in negative zero. That's just insane.
Yeah, no, it seems hardcore to me.
Yeah, I mean, I like the whole concept of surviving and getting back to basics, but there's a point where it just becomes obscene.
I would agree. I would agree with that.
All right, so let's jump on Homestead Hunters first before we talk about Sandy. So why don't you tell us what you found?
Well, I'm kind of torn, actually. I just sent you a link to another one that I found recently, and so I'm a little split on these. You know, I think I might go with this last one.
The one in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, they were both in Michigan. One is in Applegate, and this new one I found is in North Street. You know what? I'm going to post them both.
Okay.
I'm going to post them both this week because I'm torn. I really liked the first one at first because it was so close to the lake, and I found that fascinating. But this one here is actually closer to a larger town. This one on 4571 Craft Road, North Street, Michigan, and I'll post this up on my Facebook. It's facebook.com/ Colorado Ron page.
Let me let people know. So. I've actually been out in this area. North Street is about 45 minutes to an hour north of Detroit and about 2 hours east of Ann Arbor.
Okay.
It's actually if you went direct west, you'd be in Flint, Michigan in about an hour. If you go direct south, you're in Detroit in about an hour. It's right at the tip of Lake Huron.
Yeah, and so I really like the area. I've been up there before. It's been a long time since I've been up there, but, you know, all the pictures, you know, the big trees, full grass, you know, water doesn't seem to be much of an issue up there. And you know, I found this house. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 3,475 square feet, so it's a fairly large home. The other thing I like about it is it's one story. So as we get older, we tend to look for one stories, I've noticed. But it's on 2.65 acres, and it's only $45,000.
Wow, that's a steal. Here's the problem, though. That's a hard-hit area. So if you're going up there, this would be more of a bug-out location, or you'd pretty much have to be working from home or something like that. That's probably why it's fairly inexpensive. But that's something. That's the kind of area you want for a bug-out, for a second home.
Right, right. I mean, it's a great bug-out location. Or again, there's a lot of us that can work from home. As long as you have internet, it seems like it's doable. And so something like that, you can almost depending on your financial situation, if you had to get a mortgage on it, it looks like the mortgage would be about $150, $200 a month, which is ridiculously low. And if you could pay cash for it, that's even better. It's $45,000. That's about as cheap as it gets. And it is a brick/wood home. It does have brick exterior and wood. It has a big great room on it, and has a nice fireplace. I don't know, man. It sure seems ideal to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always torn on things like this because the area seems good. An hour is not that far to drive to go and get to a major city with major things. But as you know, because you lived in an area that was just like that, it becomes a pain in the butt if you have to go in on a regular basis.
Yes.
And especially in an area like Michigan, who is known for ice storms and snowstorms. But if you can deal without that, you're good. And just so you know, as Colorado Ron always checks, finds these great places, my job is to look at the utilities. And it does have DSL available at that. You can get DSL out to that property. And as always, there is no cable available. But there is also Dish. So you can get Dish or DirecTV. That's available out there. But that's pretty much available anywhere. So you can always get internet. And as far as actual fiber lines, DSL is available up to 3 megabits. That's pretty fast.
Is that pretty fast? So there you go. I mean, So technically, myself, I could work from home from this location, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, that's faster than what I have. I mean, here in Iowa, I'm at 1.5 megabits to 2 megabits. People who live in the city usually can nowadays get 3 megabits to 6 megabits. That's smoking fast. Nowadays, 1.5 megabits, 768 upload download to 1.5 is what you get on Dish or on satellite. And so I'm a little bit better than satellite, but not tremendously better at this point, but it's still good enough. I can stream video and everything else. So this is pretty good that you can get 3 megabits up and down.
How hard this thing was hit. Did you see the history on it? In 2007, 2006, 2007, this sucker was valued at over $300,000, like $320,000. And let's see here, $334 was its peak in 2006. And then, of course, we all know what happened in 2007 with the car industry, and that kind of hurt everything. In 2008, which is when the economy hit nationwide, the value of that home was still $243,000. So this sucker's dropped $200,000.
Yeah, well, I mean, as of December of 2011, it was still $235,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and now it's dropped down to where it is, which is sub $50,000. And, I mean, I'm going to Michigan next week. I might actually drive up and go check this place out.
Really? Are you going there?
Yeah, well, I have to go up to my office up in Michigan, so I'm leaving on Sunday, and I'll be out there Monday and Tuesday.
I actually would like for you to look at this if you do have time.
I think I'm going to. This is just the value. I mean, if you look at a four-year trend, I mean, even when the place was built, how old is this place? 85. So yeah. If you go back to the early 2000 period, 2002, it was at $200,000, $194,000.
Right.
Yeah. You know, even at 2009 when everything hit, it was about 200,000. There's obviously something that dropped it dramatically down in 2011, which is probably the economy. But 2.5 acres for 45, that's $20,000 an acre, guys, and that's cheap for any land in Michigan just by the acreage alone.
Yeah.
You could probably tear down this house and sell it for 20,000 bucks an acre. So, yeah, that's a pretty tremendous deal. And my guess is this thing's probably in foreclosure, which is why this is probably what's owed on it.
Uh-huh.
And that's why it's so cheap. So this was an awesome find, Colorado. Make sure you you mark this one, and we'll talk on Sunday, and I will probably go out and visit this one. It's only an hour and a half drive from my office up there, and I think I'll go take a look for you.
Nice, nice. Thanks.
Okay, what was the other one? Let's talk about the other one.
Oh, yeah, the other one. I've kind of forgot about that one now.
you know something? I would say this is your best deal that you have found to date. This one's smoking. If this place is in good shape, then, wow, just hands down, this is a pretty tremendous deal.
I agree. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. So, you know what?
This is a flippable house. This is a flippable house. I mean, if you don't have it as a secondary home and you don't want it, this is something I think in a year or two when the economy gets better. Vote, guys, vote. And
yes.
When it gets better, I bet you this thing will be back up at the $150,000 market, nothing flat.
I agree. I mean, you're looking at almost 3,500 square feet. That is a lot of house for $45,000.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't have the land, that's a lot of house.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go out there and see what's around it, because this might be a good hunting cabin.
Hey now, don't take my spot. I didn't announce it on the radio, I guess, probably, huh?
Yeah, everybody will be rushing up there. I'll get up there, and I'll be running into three or four people on Monday. You should ask for a brokerage fee.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a killer deal. I think I'm very interested in that one myself.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, well, then let's call this one the deal of the day. And you know something, guys? I will take live pictures. I'll go out there, and maybe I'll even call the real estate agent and have them take me inside, and I'll take pictures of the inside. And this could be a very, very, very cool deal. All right, before we have to go, because we've only got 12 minutes left, let's talk about Hurricane Sandy. Man, you know, we touched on it a little bit with Jackie. That was one nasty storm going through.
Slow and big.
Yeah, Jen, my wife was talking about how lucky we were because for some reason it decided to stop at the Mississippi. I guess we're on the right side of the Mississippi. You're always telling me I'm on the good side of the Mississippi. I mean, it was like a big hand from divinity came down and said, "Whoop, that's where you stop," because all the clouds just stopped at the Mississippi, and it just stalled. And so we didn't get anything on this side, and I was very, very grateful.
Yeah.
I agree. But this is why we tell everybody to prep. I mean, first of all, they're calling this a super storm or, they were calling a monster storm because basically what happened was you had a hurricane that hit an Arctic wind. So it wasn't just like a typical storm and everything else. You have 2 feet of snow in areas. You had ice storm and hail storms in other areas. And then you had like, you know, the Jersey Shore, that was completely hammered. It was ridiculous. And then there was people that were standing for hours in line for gas and there was no power. There was, flooding. I mean, parts of New York and everything else just completely flooded. The subways flooded. I mean, I don't even know. This is just.
Well, yeah, I saw those pictures of the cars just like stuffed down into the subway entrance. It was it's pretty wild looking. And to think I was just there a couple weeks ago is pretty nuts.
Yeah, well, I mean, what would blow my mind is seeing storm damage like houses kind of crushed in like they do when a hurricane's coming there, and then seeing them surrounded in snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, wow, that just looks bizarre.
That's a good point.
But, you know, every news channel I was watching, and this is what infuriates me. And, you know, one day I hope that we're talking to millions and millions and millions of people as opposed to, you know, the numbers that we have. And, you know, we're doing, in every show we improve. So, but you got to tell your friends. The idea that in an area that gets storms every year, whether they're snowstorms, ice storms, whatever, that people didn't even have batteries or water or any basic food that they could cook or eat without having electricity baffles the mind. That
yeah.
Every year they show photographs of people having to get government assistance because they just didn't even have the basics. And you know, this will be fairly cleaned up in 2 weeks. So again, a 2 week or a month supply, you know, and these people are still going to be without homes and everything for a while. But I'm talking about the people who were lucky enough just to get minor damage and just don't have electricity. Some of these people don't have anything other than the clothes on their back. And that's just so sad to me.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that's exactly why, you know, we do what we do, is to get these people more prepared. You know, it's fascinating to talk with people that are from New York that were prepared or are prepared for things like this, strictly because they, you know, they interviewed us or we've talked and they said, okay, well, I'm going to get more prepared. And, you know, that gets me excited, to know that, you know, that, you know, just by talking and having a conversation, it made somebody go out and get a little bit more prepared for something like this.
Now, here's something I can't guarantee we're going to do. I was just jotting down notes here and I want to throw it out there. I think we should give Alan a call from Doomsday Preppers next week.
Oh, that's a good one.
And you know, so for those of you guys who don't know, Alan is the executive producer of Doomsday Preppers for National Geographic. And, you know, every time we have him on before he comes to an expo and everything else, we ask him, you know, have you improved your prepping? Have you done anything? Because he lives in New York. And, you know, we always get kind of a him and a ha, and he goes, I'm prepping more now than I did before, but I'm still not into it. And so New York's been hit pretty hard. I mean, Atlantic City's gotten trashed, but, you know, New York got hit pretty hard. I would be curious to see if how much prepping he had gotten done before and if a major storm hitting him and doing as much damage as this has changed his mind and his attitude.
I agree. That's a good one. Brooklyn's there too.
Oh yeah, let's call Brooklyn too. Yeah, and she's a young girl. She's a pretty young girl. She's probably in her 20s. And she's one of the actually, I don't even know what Brooklyn's title is. She's a junior producer, right? She kind of goes out and finds the people.
Yes, uh-huh.
And, you know, and she, you know, and we have someone that works for us, Laura, that she's our head of marketing. And it's kind of funny. She's 25 years old, and Brooklyn had the kind of the same attitude, which is, you know, I'm in my 20s. I really don't have to, I don't want to think about this. You know, just it is what it is. But, you know, it doesn't take much, folks, to have the basics there so you can take care of you and yours for a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And not be dependent and be in this thing where, you know, all these people are standing in line because they don't have enough food or water for their kids or themselves. And, yeah, it'll be interesting. They spent 2 years recording other people with their preps. I'm definitely think we should try to just give them a brief call next Saturday and see, A, how they're doing and make sure they're all right, but, B, if spending 2 years with preppers has done anything for them.
You know what? I love it. I think we should.
All right, awesome. All right, well, I think that's it. Do you have anything else, Colorado?
I don't. I think we're good to go.
All right. Well, guys, you guys have been listening to Backwoods Home Magazine. We're on live every Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon Central Standard Time. And next week we will have the fantastic, the always fun Mr. Jack Spearco. And the reason I say that is we always get in a little debates and arguments and things like that. Jack's a fun guy. He is a fountain of knowledge. For you guys who don't know Jack Spearco, I highly recommend that you go check out his site and everything else. He does daily podcasts, and he is in. I don't like using the word expert, but with Jack, I almost have to. He is a permaculture. I know he's a permaculture god. There you go. You should like
that. From expert to God. That's awesome.
I know. I'll tell you what. Some of the things I listen with Jack, you know, I say this is good information. But the more I listen to his permaculture stuff, the more amazed I am at how really on it and how knowledgeable he is with the permaculture stuff. I'm very impressed with his permaculture stuff.
Yeah.
You know, The rest of the stuff, hey, Jack, love you, but, yeah, you got some work to do. But permaculture, you're smack on, buddy. And that's actually what we're going to be talking about next week, is we'll have Jack on next Saturday, and we will be talking about permaculture lessons. He just wrote did a great episode, number 1009, I think. Can you imagine? He's done 1009 podcasts.
Wow.
Anyway, it was permaculture lessons and observations from 2012, you know, different things that he realized on, from concepts to design to everything else. Fascinating stuff. So we're honored and always privileged to have Jack Spierko on. So that'll be next week. We'll touch base with the Doomsday Prepper folks, hopefully. And I guess that's it.
That should be it.
All right, brother. Hey, like always, you can hit us up on our website, www.backwoodshome.com. Check out, come get our magazine. You know, Backwoods Home Magazine is on the shelves right now. The December, January issue is, I believe, what it is. You've got it in front of you, don't you, Colorado?
I do.
Is it December, January, or November, December?
It is November, December.
Okay. Great stuff in there. Jackie's got that heater that we were talking about, the stock heater. Great information in there. We're done with expos for the year, but we'll be updating that for real soon. www.selfrelianceexpo.com. You're always welcome on our Facebook pages, Backwoods Home Mag, for Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Expo, all one word for Self-Reliance Expo, Bubba Da Vinci for me, and Facebook/ColoradoRon for Colorado Ron. Is that right?
Colorado Ron page.
Oh, Colorado Ron page. I always forget that. Colorado Ron page. You don't put page, you don't get on. That's right. All right, guys, that's it for me. And for Colorado Ron, we'll talk to you guys next week. Be safe.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.